Welcome to the Jeff and Jamie feed. Today we're doing a short little episode here about the Fork and Hammer series to catch you guys up on what's going on in the series. This is a 10-part original program on PBS, and you can find it at pbs.org, on PBS Passport, and on YouTube TV, all those places. We'd love to see you checking out that show. But we spent some time talking about the premiere and episodes 1 and 2. But today we're going to jump into a handful of episodes and just kind of share what were some of the big takeaways or big things we think that program really is showing in each one of those episodes.
Yeah, I think there's a few behind the scenes snippets that we can add to each one of these shows to kind of shed some light on some things and make them fun. You want to start with the summer soiree?
Yeah, summer soiree. So, I mean, that was a pretty crazy event that we put on. We put on this event at Supperland, and what we did was we had the chefs from all of our restaurants all help create a menu. So we did gobs of tastings leading up to the event and created this menu that really focused around the summer harvest here in the Carolinas, which is super strong. We have an abundant farming produce season right there at the end of summer. And so we created this event to really allow our chefs to get creative.
This is a Port Milanese, very, very bright. It's got a lot of lemon zest in it, super delicious.
So yes, okay. We're marrying Sweet. Japanese, Mexican, and Southern cuisine in this dish.
Beautiful.
That's great.
Duck fat roasted corn and mushrooms, and then the beef cheek is slow braised.
The coolest part was I think we paired all the chefs together and made them work together to come up with their dishes. And it was the first time that we'd ever really like cross team, cross restaurant utilized things. And I thought it was a great bonding experience for the chefs. I thought they really enjoyed it. And we had a great time going out after the summer soiree too with all the chefs. I mean, at least I did.
I know, I went home, Jeff. I don't remember that part, but okay, good for you. Good for you. But I think when you watch that summer soiree program again, this is the third episode, you really see teamwork. And I think, you know, from our perspective, you know, a lot of people ask us, like, how do you do all this? How do you do all you do? Here's the thing. We don't. We don't do it all.
No.
There's so many people. We've got 300 people on our team, and our executive chefs and our managers are there at the top really making a lot of things happen. And, you know, you put a dinner together like this, and it's really orchestrating.
It's amazing because we have somebody that is watching everything going, okay, we need a spoon here. We need this mise en place at the table there. The servers need to know this. The servers need to know that. And then we have another person thinking, oh, what needs to be on the menu? What needs to be on the dietary menu? And just knocking all those little pieces out.
Yeah.
No one person could do all of those things. So it's great that we have such a high functioning team. They're awesome.
Absolutely. Well, the next episode, episode 4, is Cocina Española.
This is the one. This is when we realized we were filming a show.
Things got complicated when we were filming in Spain, didn't they?
We were rolling 14 deep.
With family members traveling to Spain.
Your family.
Yes, my family. It's a whole other thing.
14 deep rolling through Spain. And then all of a sudden we have a film crew, and not just a film crew, but a drone crew, somebody in Yaki on his hoverboard,
yep.
Rolling through, you know, traffic everywhere. And it was such a thing. It was crazy.
Where are we now? This street is awesome.
This is Calle Laurel. People come here with their friends and their families. They hop from bar to bar. It's got about 30, 40 different spots, each with their own specialty.
That was when filming felt so exhausting, right?
Yes.
Usually, like in our normal life, it's fine. It all works seamlessly. But there, when you're overseas, you're trying to capture a lot of what's going on. So it did feel exhausting. But also, it was fun and amazing and new. But I think that for me, more than anything, that episode really shows forth how important travel is to us.
Yes.
For creating the restaurants and being inspired by the restaurants. For the restaurants.
For sure. It's such a big part of what inspired us to do this. And then, it's really a big part of how we, you know, figure out what we're going to do next and get inspiration and ideas. I wanted to talk, though, about there's one scene in this that it just, like, I die laughing every time I see it. because as you know, my Spanish is
poor at best. Oh, but I know what scene you're talking about.
I have the worst kitchen Spanish ever. And so we're in a restaurant. I'm supposed to do a cooking demo with the chef in the basement. And they're like, there's not enough room down there. And the chef only wants to speak Spanish, even though she could speak some English. She was not comfortable speaking English on camera. And so we're like, cool. And I'm going down there with the translator. And then the translators, and then they say, there's not enough room for the translator.
Oh, dear. Yes, I remember.
So I end up down there. And lucky enough, a few days beforehand on the plane, I had read the recipe pretty much from this historic restaurant of how to make pil-pil. So it was very, very fresh in my mind. So I'm there. She's speaking in Spanish, and I'm kind of translating, not knowing a single thing that she's saying, but just the fact that I had read the recipe.
You play it off. You guys will see that in the episode.
I have no idea what she's saying.
He's down in the kitchen, and literally, we know he has no idea what this chef is saying, but she doesn't realize it. And on camera, he plays it off pretty cool.
Just a little bit of heat. See?
Tiene un proceso de mucho cariño. Lo que importante es mucho amor.
Lots of love into it, for sure.
Mucho amor.
Yes.
They did a great job editing. Thank you, Susie Films.
That's right. Well, the next one is fried chicken around the world. And fried chicken around the world was a crazy event that we did. We really wanted to lean in at Haberdish into fried chicken, which is our staple, something we do a really great job of. But offer it to guests in a totally unique way and have the whole meal around fried chicken from different parts of the world.
Yeah.
Did you have a dish you remembered really well?
Well, I mostly remember that I ate so much fried chicken in every single tasting for the weeks leading up to that. It was incredible. But I really have an affinity. A lot of it's from your brothers and visiting them in Korea. But I just love Korean food, and the Korean fried chicken and some of the Asian stuff that we were doing was phenomenal.
Third course, we're going to blow up everybody's palate with some strongly flavored Korean fried chicken. So that outside gets super, super crispy and fluffy and different than any other textured fried chicken you've probably ever had.
Yeah, tiny bit of background. I've got two adopted brothers from Korea, so I grew up with them. And so we had a lot of Korean influences in our home when we were growing up. And Jeff and I had the chance to go visit them many years ago now. But you're right.
It's a different style, but the crispy rice flour on the chicken, like it's pretty awesome. And we always talk about at Haberdish how we, you know, would change the chicken. And we try to stay pretty rooted in the South and in Southern culture, but we kind of trickled just a little bit of rice flour in there, kind of hidden in the background, because rice is a Southern ingredient that we, you know, can rely on. So we feel like we can use it a little bit, but we can't go overboard that you're having Korean fried chicken at Haberdish every day.
Yep, absolutely. Well, we're kind of doing speed rounds here with these episodes. And then the next one is pairings. And this one's a lot about how food and drink pair together.
I learned so much about our people, though, in this episode.
Oh,
I just love the couch and everybody talking to each other.
And just
having our people kind of, I mean, they're getting interviewed, and there's some things I didn't know about their childhoods and those kind of things and their relationships. And we have so many couples that work here. It's really special, and it makes it nice.
Yeah. So when you watch the program, you'll see that there are multiple segments where you have a couple seated on a couch, kind of When Harry Met Sally style. And it's just kind of an old looking couch and just a cute little environment. And you get to know these couples, because we do. We have, you know, Savannah and Taylor, you and me. We've got a handful of others and some that have come and gone, too.
Yeah.
Or portions of couples and other people work in the industry. But that is a lot of fun.
Oh, for sure.
To see. But that one gets very personal to me, and I cry in the episode, and it's not like the pretty cry. So I've had to be very forgiving with myself about it, because it's actually like a little bit of an ugly cry that happens. And forgive me, because it's very real. And
well, you had, I mean, you're getting pretty deep and being honest with people and vulnerable. And yeah. So that's remarkable. It's awesome.
Thanks, Jeff. Well,
it's not all just twins hanging out paddleboarding.
It does dive a little bit into my relationship with my twin sister. I have an identical twin sister, and she lives in Charleston. And you do get to see us on there. And there's a scene where we're walking out onto the dock, and I'm like, good Lord, we do look alike. I forget.
You guys are in denial about being identical.
Well, yeah, I think we're always comparing ourselves to one another.
Really?
So it's like, I always feel like, oh, she looks prettier, she looks better, whatever. And I was like, wow, we look similar. Okay, great.
I love it.
Yep. So last one, history on the move.
I can't believe we've made it to this point. This was just a parking lot. And to see now the fruition of this building actually arrive here, it's a little bit astounding.
That was a feat and something maybe we don't ever want to live again.
Except
on TV.
Yeah, I'm pretty good on the building move thing. I think you do it once, you're good.
So you guys will get to see this in History on the Move if you haven't seen it already. But basically, we didn't really come across, but we learned of this 1903 historic brick building that is in the South End neighbor of Charlotte. And it was the former grocery store for the Atherton Mill Village. And we had the opportunity to save the building. So through a lot of hoops through the city and rezoning and drumming up neighborhood support and all of that, we were able to move this building 750 feet up the street and into our parking lot at Leluia Hall.
We had our obstacles and lots of things that we had to overcome. But at the end of the day, when you look back on it, the people that came together to help us do this between... the Centrum folks and
Duke Energy Spectrum and AT&T.
Yeah, people letting us drive a building through their parking lot and those kind of things are just amazing, the amount of partnership and support of the people that really mattered to get that done. It was awesome.
You're so right, and it really comes full circle to what we were talking at the beginning, which is teamwork. Mm-hmm. A restaurant does not come to life. And, a beautiful meal does not come together without that teamwork. And surely a building does not get moved successfully without a gigantic team. And we saw that there as well.
Yeah. And even the Wolf guys, they were on point in money through the whole process.
For sure. So. Well, thanks for joining us for these quick little recaps of Fork and Hammer. And do stay tuned. Please like, comment, share here on the podcast. And also watch along on pbs.org. We'd love to see you there, too.
Binge it. Let's go.
All right. See you all.